There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live at the Yellow Dragon Drill podcast. This is your host Tigger, and as always with me is my co-host Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi, Niksha.
Hey.
Yes.
We're back again.
Mm-hmm.
So, Niksha, how has your amount of time been?
It was fine. Pretty uneventful, but fine. And how about you?
Work was a bitch, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about happy topics.
Yeah, like, we got the entire Theros block spoiled, since it's coming out next week.
Mm-hmm. And the pre-release is next week.
Yeah.
You're coming to the Two-Headed, right?
No.
Aw. Come on, don't be a bitch.
No. I decided that it's more worth to just, you know, use that entrance money and just buy some cards and then be done with the set.
Or buy yourself a Switch?
Or, I mean, it's not really gonna help me a lot in buying a Switch. But, yeah, it brings me one step closer to a Switch.
Well, yeah, that's how it goes. I'm looking forward to the whole pre-release thing, just to go get out of the house and hang out with S and, you know, mm-hmm. play some cards. And maybe open a Heliod, because he's a fun, fair card.
Mm-hmm.
He actually is a fun, fair card. Other card that combines with it is not a magic, fair card of any sort.
But before we get into that, let's talk about our commanders of the week. So, Igor, how about you?
Do we both have the same experience of playing the league as the commander of the week, or...?
Well, I have my commander of the week, and he's really spicy.
You start with the spice first, I actually want to hear this.
So, we had our free-for-all tournament, and I went with Ashling the Pilgrim.
Hooray!
So, Ashling the Pilgrim is going to be my commander of the week, and the decklist is pretty cool. It has 99 mountains, and the worst part is, from four rounds we played, I almost won two of them.
Damn.
I was really close. So one round, if only one of them didn't have a death-touching blocker, I would have actually won. Like, that one death-touching guy just completely blocked my deck, because I didn't want to sacrifice Ashling until I had 10 mana, so I can play Ashling and then have mana to sink in to actually blow up everything. But yeah, Ashling did like around 50 damage per round.
Sheesh.
I mean, which is still 70 damage off from killing everyone.
But still, that's a bunch of damage.
Yeah, because I played turn 2. By the way, if you're playing 99 Mountain Ashling, pro tip, mulligan to 2. So you can play around Windfall.
Oh yes, in your deck you really need to play around Windfall.
I mean, you don't want to feed other people's Windfalls.
I mean, you can even go to bloody one card and it's fine.
Well, you probably could go to one card. It's just that you don't want to go to zero cards, because somebody at some point might give you a land extra from your hand. And that's, you know, always a welcome thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, going down to one or two cards, it's completely fine. And actually suggested.
Niksha, the Grandmaster of Ashling the Pilgrim.
And so you play it on turn 2. Your turn 3, you attack somebody for 2. Turn 4, you attack somebody for 4. You know, that damage adds up. And then you blow up. And then at some point you blow up the table. One round we had Standstill in play. And nobody wanted to play anything, because it's Standstill. And I'm like, okay, I literally can't play anything else. I only have my commander on the board. I can't attack you, because you'll kill my creature. I can't attack you, because you'll kill my creature. And I can't attack the third person, because he has a damn death touch elf.
Can't you just pump Ashling and be done with it?
I did. I dealt 16 damage. Ashling went to 16 counters and then exploded.
Damn.
And then the next time Ashling was supposed to blow up. They first countered the ability, and then in response I activated again. Then they wanted to kill Ashling, and in response activated again. In response to that, they all again wanted to kill Ashling. I was like, guys, stop. I still have mana. Okay, in response, activate Ashling. And then the fourth card came and finished off the Ashling. I was like, really? I
have 99
That's... mountains in my deck. And people are wasting four cards to stop my commander from blowing up.
The power of mono red, people.
And one of our friends went, actually won 3 out of 4 rounds that tournament. And the only round he lost was because of my Ashling.
Ha!
And funny thing is, I only have 40... I have only like 50 mountains, and I asked for people to bring me their mountains, and he was the only person that actually brought me 50 more mountains.
I was gonna bring you mountains, but then I figured that I was gonna be coming way later than the thing started.
And then, so thanks to his kindness, I returned that by blowing stuff up. I mean... To be fair, he wanted to be really a really villainous person, and he wanted to give me a Gilded Drake in for my Ashling, but somebody countered that Gilded Drake because they said that I'll blow up Ashling if they counter it, and then I blew up Ashling, as Ashlings go.
That's the only thing she can do.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm gonna actually do something about the deck, because the first thing is... just remove one mountain to add in Blood Moon, so you can, like, legit just mulligan to one card, hoping that you draw Blood Moon.
Yeah, that's fair.
You can put in a Grafted Exoskeleton. No, not Grafted Exoskeleton, or is it?
It is Grafted Exoskeleton.
The one that gives...
yes,
in fact. Yeah, so you can actually consistently make the game a draw, because you get infected as well. Maybe add a Sword of Fire and Ice because it gives protection from red. There's also Sword of War and Peace, Sword of Sinew and Steel, and Sword of... Well, that's it, right? Yeah, that's
you
it.
You can also add Ruination to the deck.
Nah. Or maybe, yeah. I mean, and there's like 10 cards, and yeah, you still have 89 mountains.
Yeah, and you're fine.
And you're completely fine. You're still complete. Some people thought I was actually playing cards in my deck, and I was like, no, I wrote on the forum that I'm bringing a 99 mountain Ashling, and I don't joke around about this kind of stuff.
Mountains are cards.
But you can't actually, well, you can play them, but you can't cast them.
But that's a different thing.
So, yeah, I was actually quite close to winning a bunch of games, and that was like, oh, wow, oh. Okay, so I guess Ashling works. I mean, it doesn't work when it's turned into an elk.
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay, I just elk. I guess I can get in for commander damage.
You can do that. I mean, it's not the most competitive deck you could be playing, but you know.
I don't know. Some people were quite terrified of Ashling, so I'll probably do it again sometime.
Apparently 3 people were super afraid of the Ashling.
Yep. So Ashling is my commander of the week. How about you, Igor?
I took Alesha to our CDH league pod. First game, can you guess what happened?
You got comboed out.
Oh no, I got Cursed Totem.
Oh.
By me. And I made a mistake of... So Cursed Totem was out. Anafenza was out, Redcap was out, I had Goblin Bombardment, then Goblin Bombardment got killed.
Mm-hmm.
But since that was the first pod after I came from a devastating day of work, I wasn't thinking straight. I gambled for a Viscera Seer, and then I played him. And I was like, oh no, I'm an idiot. If I was smart, I would have just went for the Sar Titan, get the thing back, and then kill him next turn. Because I would have mana to play him next turn. But that was fine. Game 2 was interesting, actually.
How so?
I managed to... game was going alright, and then I was we were playing against the frog amongst other people. Our opponent wasn't posturing, you know, as he usually does when he has a good hand. I was like, okay, fuck it, let's see what happens. Star of Insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Robin looked at me like, you're either an idiot or have the biggest balls in the universe. Turns out the Gitrog didn't have anything good, but Star of Insanity wasn't the MVP of that game. It was Neheb.
Mm-hmm.
The Dreadhorde General, Because that guy drew me like, before Serving Sentinel landed down and won me the game, drew me like 6 cards each turn.
That's a pretty hefty amount of cards.
Yeah, I was drawing so many cards. I slammed Serving Sentinel, then I slammed, I actually reanimated Elesh Norn.
Mm-hmm.
Killing Robby's field, killing everybody's field, and people looked at my field and just scooped up. I was like, oh, wait, I actually managed to win a game? What the hell is this?
Haha.
I wasn't expecting that.
Get sired.
Get Nehebd, actually. People have been telling me to take both Serving Sanity and Nehebd out, but Nehebd is here just for plays like this.
Remember when we glorified Nehebd, the Eternal?
We didn't glorify him enough, if you ask me.
I mean, we did glorify Nehebd the Eternal, but not Nehebd the Dreadhorde Butcher. The Dreadhorde General.
No, the Dreadhorde General we were also hyping up because he's our little boy. He's our special little boy.
Yeah.
You know who comboed out really well with Nehebd? The Mindblade Render. He was a fun guy.
Huh.
Drawing more and more and more cards. Game 3 just wasn't going my way. I didn't have a really good good playtime, but we did have one fun interaction in game 3. I apologize. Two Strangleholds and two Evan Mind Sensors at the same time.
All right.
Nobody's ever going to tutor anything. The game ended with me having like literally over 25 treasure tokens, and I was just drawing crap, couldn't cast anything proper with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me sad. But I managed to get a win. Everybody in the Discord was hyping me to go, you know, OX, whatever the number of games you're going to be playing in the end. But I disappointed everybody by actually making a win.
Yeah, so, well, in other news, I also got a win today.
Care to share that? How did that go?
Oh, well, I was playing Yuriko. I was trying out something new. The first two games were pretty poor for me because I didn't draw my one drops. I did have a consistent mana base, but game one, I was destroyed by my own the storage land for black and blue. I didn't put any storage counters on it at any point, and then I lacked the second blue mana. So yeah, playing colorless lands in two color decks isn't really a good idea.
Especially if you forget to, you know, put things on them.
It's not that I forgot, I just never had the chance.
Oh, well. But how did you win the game?
So, game 1 and 2, I was just comboed out first from Consultation Kess, and then from, well, Consultation Timna and the fish guy.
Uh-huh, Thrasios.
Thrasios Timna. And then the third game, Thrasios Timna went on to combo off, and our Kess player just packed him, but he had four lands in play. He knew he was going to lose, but he wanted to give the rest of us a chance.
There you go.
And then it was just me against the fae cursed, the fae touched king, Korvold. And since he didn't have any cards in his hand, it was kind of, you know, a lot easier for me to just swing with my guys, put in some more ninjas, and then go for 18 per turn, at least. Something along those lines.
That's a lot per turn.
Yeah. I mean, there was also this random ink eyes that stole his squee. So even if he wanted to go Food Chain Infinite, he couldn't.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. That was okay.
Wait, what was Mati playing again?
Well, he was playing Zur, but he wasn't in our pod.
Oh yeah, sorry, I mixed pods up. Of course he was playing Zur. Yeah, anything else you wanted to add?
Well, no. And those have been my commanders of the week. I mean, just the Ashling. The Yuriko was whatever.
I was gonna just add, you know the recent acquisitions I got from Bologna, like Contamination and Blood Moon?
Yeah.
They paid themselves off.
Big time.
Our frog player was gonna win the turn after I cast the Contamination, but I cast the Contamination. Holy crap.
Yeah, Contamination, a pretty obnoxious card.
That and one of the funnier plays I made was play Plague Engineer, named Wizard. Robby had Bob and even Mind Sensor out. So that was
crummy Wizard.
And after the tournament, I bought a couple of cards, among them a Phyrexian Altar. That's a good card. We got Lotus Cobra and what's the name of that elf that taps for million mana, which is equal to number of elves in play?
A priest of Titania.
We got her death approach. Mm-hmm. That's gonna be tapping for many a mana.
Yeah.
If you know, there's no cursed totems out in the field.
Of course. Yeah, cursed totem is a big problem for Ashling as well. Let me just say that.
You think? Especially when you have 99 mountain.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say? I can't believe that this is the second game in the pod that I've managed to screw myself over with cursed totem.
Well, gotta be wary of your stack speed.
Counterpoint, I wouldn't have gotten to that point in the game if the cursed totem wasn't out.
True.
So, cursed totem, give it, cursed totem, take it. But ready to jump to the meat of the podcast?
Let's hop right in.
So, like we said, the full spoiler is out for Terros Beyond Dead.
Let me just say, I was super close with my last prediction about the White God.
Oh god, yes. So let's start with him. So tell us what he does and then tell us the prediction.
So my prediction was that Heliod would put a +1/+1 counter on a creature whenever you gain life, because putting it on your whole team would probably deemed too powerful, and he would probably passively give your creatures lifelink. Well, turns out Heliod, Sun Crowned, is a 2 and a white for a 5/5 legendary enchantment creature god. He has the usual Theros God clause of indestructible and devotion to white less than 5 isn't a creature, blah blah blah. And whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature or enchantment you control. So, you know, you can put it on a non-active god, so when he becomes a creature, he's more buff. So he got that part right, and he, for 1 and a white, it's a activated ability to give another target creature lifelink until end of turn.
So we figured this was a cute ability, and then people remembered one small card that doesn't see any play anywhere.
Yeah, definitely. Well, who plays Triskelion, right?
I mean, you're actually not far off. Triskelion does combo with this card. Also, the Walking Ballista combos with this card.
Mm-hmm. For a pretty nice machine gun effect.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap, white finally has a combo it can do?
I mean, when I first talked about that effect, I never thought of actually other cards. It's just that with the whole life gain thing it had, and with, you know, with that queen from words so hard, from the last set,
mm-hmm.
that gave you a bunch of life. It's like, when you look at this Heliod in a vacuum, he's pretty bad. Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really do a thing. He makes a guy, he makes a creature like the Ajani Pride Mate. But, you know, there's Ajani Pride Mate, and he's not that good unless you're talking Soul Sister. What I fail to understand is that Ballista exists. Some persist creatures exist, like Kitchen Finks, that go infinite. But that's the whole thing. Heliod enables things, well, arguably better cards, to go infinite, while he himself isn't really that amazing, let's say. I mean, sure, if he's your commander, you just need one more card to combo off. And white doesn't have that much troubles getting a small creature or artifact.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
So basically, I would play him personally in a stack shell, and then have a bunch of tutors to get artifacts and creatures.
You just need that one creature?
Yeah.
Just play the silence and that's it.
Ranger of Eos?
That too, yeah.
You basically play all the creature and artifact and enchantment tutors, and have him and have all the stacks effects you can.
Just not cursed totem kind of effects.
I mean, unless you have another passive way to give your creatures lifelink.
Well, but then still, you can't shoot people with Ballista.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good
also
point.
Make sure there isn't a Giselle on the field, because you don't deal any damage. And make sure that your opponents don't have Urza's power armor.
The most notorious card in all of EDH.
Yeah.
But the Heliod turned out to be surprisingly powerful. Not because he's that good, but because supporting cards are that good.
Yeah, and with the whole, you know, super easy two-card setup, because it's a turn 4 kill. It's a turn 4 kill without any kind of acceleration.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's talk, I'm thinking, I mean, my shell for Heliod is rebuilding Cisse. And, you know, since Cisse can just get Heliod Sun Crowned, it shouldn't be that hard for Green-White to fetch a Ballista. Or, you know, a Triskelion if Ballista is...
Mm-hmm.
But I have the feeling that some of these cards are gonna get banned.
I don't... I'm hoping not, because that would be really stupid.
Because Heliod, he's just super simple to combo with a bunch of stupid things.
So is Kiki. Like, we'll see one card soon-ish. Actually, not soon-ish, but a bit down below, that, again, combos with Kiki.
Guess what? It's not... whatever. Never mind. But, yeah, and I'm thinking about Pioneer as well. That Heliod... That Ballista might get banned... Because it's a super easy two-card combo that just outright kills your opponent. And if they ban Ballista, well, they basically ruined Scales, Hardened Scales. Yep. And that deck isn't really relevant in the meta right now.
That's a fun deck to play.
It's a fun deck, but it turns out it's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
So, getting if that deck loses Ballista, that deck is just gone. It's why would you play it? Not enough payoff anymore.
One last thing to say about Heliod that actually makes him that good is he's good, but like we said, with supporting cards, right?
Yeah.
But that's actually a good thing for a commander, because if all the cards in your deck are just good with your commander, just having him as, you know, nifty thing to have in your command zone is brilliant.
Yep. Just make sure not to turn him into a creature, because him becoming a creature is... Well, he gets more... prone to getting removed.
Yeah, most likely he's not even gonna become a creature, most depending what you play.
But yeah, he's a pretty good mono white commander.
Wanna speak about another god that's also mono white?
Sure.
So Tassa, the deep dwelling, for 3 and a white, I mean blue. It's a 6/5 legendary enchant creature god, indestructible, the devotion clause. At the beginning of your end step, exile up to one other target creature you control. Then return that card to the battlefield under your control. 3 in a blue, tap another target creature. So could this have been white?
Quite possibly. Because, surprisingly, there's a white ability. There's a white card that does pretty much this in the common slot. But, you know, it's an instant and just flickers a card.
White has like 3 or 4 cards that just flicker a card.
And then suddenly blue does that.
I'm surprised they didn't have anything good to give to blue.
It taps a creature? I mean...
More often, actually, white taps a single creature.
Yeah.
Usually it's with a Master Decoy ability, like white and a tap, and tap a target creature. But for 4 mana, I don't see why white couldn't just tap a dude.
I just don't see the connection between, you know, flickering a creature and tapping a creature. It's like this Tassa is just... it's just a pile of text to me.
Like, I'm surprised they lost inspiration at the blue card. White card makes sense. The blue one is like, okay, what are we doing?
Like, okay, tapping a target creature, what does it do with... What does it have to do with, you know, flickering things at your end step? I mean, okay, so Tassa, let's say... Tassa really not that good of a commander, because flickering stuff in mono blue, not really that super exciting. But definitely in the Yarok deck, pretty good.
Yarok deck, Cedris.
In Cedris, yeah.
He doesn't mind creatures getting exiled at end of turn.
At all.
It's a good support for a bit slower blink deck, I guess. Something like Rune of the Hidden.
Yeah. It's a Conjurer's Closet in a color that can, at some point, hit people and has a mana sink, I guess.
And it's indestructible. That's important. But overall, not a really exciting card.
Not exciting, but still, it does work. It's not as good as the first Tassa, but the first Tassa was good because it was highly competitive.
I mean, the first Tassa did 2 really disjointed things, but really strong things.
Scrying, but they were still
really good.
Disjointed, but very blue.
Mm-hmm. This is very white.
Also, Tassa could give herself unblockable, right?
Niksha, that's why the card is bad. It's supposed to be white.
Oh, they probably made this was supposed to be Heliod, and then later on there was like, wait, we don't have Thassa. Give Heliod the life matters
gate? There
thing.
We go.
There we
it's
go.
White.
Okay, we got our god. Let's move on, and now let's actually move on to something more exciting.
So,
Erebos, Bleak-hearted. It's a 3 and a black for a 5/6. All the usual stuff. Whenever another creature you control dies, you may pay 2 life. If you do, draw a card. For 1 and a black, sacrifice another creature. Target creature gets -2/-1 until end of turn.
So this works with itself. That's good to see. And it's a really good effect for black to have. It's a really black effect for black to have.
Yeah, it also really reminds of the first Erebos, because with him you also paid 2 life to draw a card, but you had to pay 2 mana. And here you pay 2 mana to sack a creature, to pay 2 life to draw a card.
And kill a dude.
And you can kill a dude. You can even kill your own dudes to pay 2 more life and draw a card. I mean, not to mention that after a damnation, you're gonna lose, like, let's say 10 life, but, you know, you're gonna get some cards out of that.
No, you lose up to 10 life, because you can pick. You can pick and choose. That's the good part of it. That's pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get something like a red cap in your deck, oh no.
I mean, if you have other cards that give you life when things die, well,
yeah,
suddenly no drawback.
Mm-hmm. Erebos is cool.
Erebos is really... He's really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
For an... Not as a commander, I would say.
I think most of these gods are support cards.
Yeah, but you see, Heliod is a support card, but really good as a commander.
Yes, that's what I mean. Most of these gods are good in the 99. Which makes sense that Heliod would want to be a leader of the deck.
Yeah, see, since he's a self-proclaimed leader of the gods.
Yep.
And Erebos, so he fits really nicely into a aristocrat style deck. Or, you know, Korvold.
I sack a dude, I pay 2 life, I gain 6. Hooray! Balance!
Next up.
Purphoros, the bronze blooded. Right out of the gateway, he's not as broken as the previous. So for 4 and red, it's a 7/6. He's a chunky boy. Indestructible and the usual claws. Other creatures you control have haste. Just, you know, just straight up haste. That's already pretty good. 2 and red. You may put a red creature or an artifact creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So he's a sneak attack.
Not as sneaky, but still a sneak attack.
But less destructible than a sneak attack.
Yeah, you can cheat out a Nemrakul with him.
You can still cheat out the Progenitus.
You can still cheat out Progenitus. You can still cheat out Blightsteel Colossus.
Blightsteel, yep.
And then just straight out murder one player. I mean, unless they get rid of Purphoros, because then your guy can't attack, because his sneak attack skill doesn't actually give haste. He gives haste.
Yep. Yep.
I would say Sundering Titan is an idea, but, you know, kind of banned.
I wish he wasn't.
Anyhow, you wanted to say?
I wish that he wasn't banned, but before that, what was I trying to say? I mean, he's a really cool teamy commander. You will have big dudes in your deck, and you will cheat them out really early, and then smack people in the face with him.
And you see, Purphoros works well with Thassa and with Erebos.
You know with which commander does Purphoros work really well? Crash the Bloodbraided.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Holy moly.
I mean, he works with a bunch of stuff. Because, you know, cheating out creatures is pretty good. And making them die, like, you know, you need your Arena Rector or your other Rector to die, you just cheat them out. It's not really cheating them out because you're not paying anything less, but, you know, it's a way to get them killed.
Mm-hmm.
In red-white, let's say.
So all in all, Purphoros, pretty cool.
Yep, pretty cool. The usual. He's also good in... I'd say he's good in Cedris.
Yeah.
You know, more fuel for the fire. But yeah, he can't outright just win the game like the previous one.
Mm-hmm. Which is alright.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because seeing old Purphoros just makes me agitated. Because usually it means it's Purphoros, the next turn it's Prosh with so many tokens.
Yeah, this Purphoros not so good in Prosh.
Oh well.
And the last god from the monocolored cycle, we have Nylea Keen-Eyed. For a 3 and a green, 5-6, creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And for 2 and a green, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, put it into your hand. Otherwise, you may put it into your graveyard.
So she has some powerful abilities.
Yeah, the minus 1 to cast creatures really helps around when people play their Grand Arbiters.
Mm-hmm.
And the second ability is a decent mana sink.
And if only there were ways to make infinite mana in Commander.
In green.
Yeah, I mean green is a bad color, it gets hardly any support.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Also this part where you can put it into your graveyard, actually mm-hmm. kind of, actually relevant. Actually really relevant, because, if it's a creature card, put it into your hand. So
yep,
you can't actually put your escape creatures into your graveyard.
They were thinking of that, but you can put your escape spells into the graveyard.
Yeah. So you know, putting cards in graveyard usually means that they're still in your hand if you're playing Karador.
That, and you can put things like Riftstone Portal into your graveyard. It's a bit of a corner case, yeah, but you know.
So if I were still playing Karador, which I basically am, but not really, but mm-hmm. still am, Nylea would be a perfect card for the deck.
How come you're not playing Karador? Those decks were fun.
Because I had the idea that Karador would be really good with the Aragdos Chainer. Like, really absurdly good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made them the secret commanders for my Saskia.
Oh, yeah.
And then I still don't have the Chainer. But I do have the Karador and ways to tutor
me. I do see the problem.
But, you know, I kind of like having red in Karador. So, I'm gonna stick with that. Mm-hmm. Also, I can play more unused legendary creatures that I would want to make commanders, but force myself not to.
Also, some of them Sisse can't actually get.
So, yeah. And Saskia with the new addition to the deck, the first mate.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably gonna do some damage.
Tangrat.
Yeah, Tangrat. And, yeah, those were the gods. The monocolored gods.
It's super surprising that Bloody Heliod is the one to watch out for. I'm still surprised by that.
Well, that's the only surprise you'll be getting, I guess.
Basically.
So, we got the return of sagas, but looks like they learned their lesson with Dominaria.
Mm-hmm.
And these sagas aren't nearly as powerful as some sagas in Dominaria.
Ironically, the white one seems to be the most. Both white ones seem to be the most interesting.
Yeah, except they're overcosted.
I mean, the second white one, the first Aron Games, isn't that overcosted.
Oh,
And fuck you, that's a white card and you know it.
I know. Oh, man.
So, let's start. Elspeth Conquers Death for 3 and a white. First chapter, exile target permanent and opponent controls with a converted mana cost 3 or greater. It's being really faithful to Elspeth's, you know, screw everything that has a higher mana cost. Second, non-creature spells your opponents cast cost 2 more to cast until your next turn. And number 3, return target creature or planeswalker card from your graveyard to the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on it or a loyalty counter on it.
So you can return a Heliod with a loyalty counter on him.
You actually can. I do not recommend it, but you can. I wish this was like 4 mana.
At 4 mana, it would be...
Just because of the second chapter, I would maybe put it on, you know, on 4 mana, to be safe.
Yeah, but that second chapter is so telegraphed, and like, you can play so clearly around it. It's really not that big of a downside. And it, at 5 mana... I don't think it's even relevant.
That's what I'm saying. At 4, you might actually power it out early and make it a bit relevant.
At 3...
I'm thinking as a designer, not as, you know, as a player, as a designer.
At 3, it would be playable.
Oh, it would be super playable, just because of the first chapter.
Well, the first one would be kind of... it would be powered down a bit, but still.
That's the thing. If you keep it like this, 4 is the sweet spot. Not too early, but not too late. 5 mana to... Actually, 5 mana and like turn 5 or 6 for the second chapter is a bit late.
Yeah, but looking at this just reminds me of the Black Saga from Dominaria. The mm-hmm. uncommon one.
Yes, the Bolas one.
Yeah. That card was super good.
Maybe we should actually... recalibrate the way of watching, look at it as a control player. As a control player, this is not actually that bad, especially if you have a way to reset the chapters.
Yeah, but also looking at it as a control player, if you're playing black, the, you know, the Bolas one was still better. Because
let's look at it like white blue.
Why are you playing white blue? Oh, because of Teferi.
Things like, not just standard, just even EDH.
I mean, still...
You can do some nifty things with it.
Still, resetting it just to make your opponent's stuff cost 2 more...
Or exiling thing.
I mean, that one isn't really that... I don't think that one's that major, but... If you want to make things cost 2 more, then just play Bolas' statue. Because, I mean, you know, it's 6 mana.
Turn 4 or 5 this... Turn 5 or 6, the statue.
Yeah, sure, why not?
For more bit more casual metas, it might even work, which is the funniest. If you play something like Hannah or mm-hmm. the Grand Arbiter.
I mean, also, the third chapter isn't really... It's okay. It's too limited to just return from your graveyard, but it's, you know, it's not black, so you can't reanimate other people's stuff.
I'm not even focusing on the third part. I'm ignoring that part... All on its own, except for one thing. White finally got the reanimation effect again. It gets it once in a while, but it's always nice to see it. Because, oh look, white actually can do some things sometimes that other colors do.
That aren't live gain.
Yeah. Or comboing out of it.
Or that. I mean, and the rest of the sagas are just like... I don't even feel like talking about them. They don't do anything, actually.
Let's just talk about the last one. Just...
Okay, so... The first Iruan games is 2 and, in fact, a green.
Lies.
So, chapter 1, create a 1/1 white human soldier creature token.
Do you mean green?
No, white. Because, you know, Lovestruck Beast also makes a 1/1 white creature token.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So, the first Iruan games works well with Lovestruck Beast. Chapter 2, put 3 +1/+1 counters on target creature you control. Chapter 3... If you control a creature with power 4 or greater, draw 2 cards. Now that's green, see? Because it looks at power. And if you have enough power, you get to draw cards. And at chapter 4, create a gold token. And this chapter 4 is just... It's literally here just because of the flavor.
Yep. But mostly, could have this been white?
It has this part where it looks at... power of creatures, so
I think
no.
I think it's more of a... It has this part where you draw cards. White can't have
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. White can't have that.
No, I honestly think this could have worked white. Even, you know, power 4 or greater still could have been... Because this is games, right? Basically, this is Olympic Games.
Yes.
This is organization. This is structure. This is civilization doing a thing.
Also, you see, the power 4 or greater... There's this one white card we're gonna see down the line that actually makes a creature into a 4/4. So,
yeah.
You know.
It could have been a thing, but no.
Nope.
We have talked about Elspeth, right?
Yes.
Ashiok's Erasure, we have also talked about.
Yes.
It was leaked earlier. So, Aphemia the Cacophony. 1 and a black, it's 2/1 legendary harpy. It has flying because it's a harpy.
It's a legendary enchantment harpy.
Oh yeah, that's actually relevant. At the beginning of your end step, you may exile an enchantment card from your graveyard. If you do, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Not that relevant for Commander. This is a standard push card, right?
It's not even pushed. I mean, it's the most pushed part about it is that it's a 2 mana 2/1 with flying.
There you go.
With a bit of an upside that, you know, if you have... Here's the upside. It's a legendary creature, but you can play another copy of Aphemia, sacrifice the old version, and then exile the old version, and it becomes a zombie.
There you go. It works.
That's the way it works, yeah. But I don't really see it.
Eh, want to talk about the Ox, who's a better card for Commander.
Okay, so Ox of Agonas is a 3 double red for a 4/2 Ox. And when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand, then draw 3 cards. But it also has escape for 2 red and exile 8 other cards.
Sheesh.
But it escapes with a +1/+1 counter. Not really that relevant, you know, a 5/3. A 5/3 for 2 mana is kind of good. That draws
it's
you 3 cards.
That's pretty good. It's a neat card just because, look, even mono red can draw cards, unlike some cards.
Yeah, but this has been a popular effect for red for quite some time.
And it's quite cool. And it's a cute card, but I want you to read the next card. I know it's my turn to read, but Nyxia, this is a Nyxia / test card.
So Nyx Bloom Ancient for 4 and triple green. It's a 5/5 enchantment creature elemental with trample. If you tap a permanent for mana, it produces 3 times as much of that mana instead.
Holy moly.
This makes filter lands really good.
This makes mana dogs pretty... Oh, wait. Mana dogs still have it pretty good.
Yeah, but see, filter lands. Now you dump in 3 mana. I mean, you tap a land, you get 3 mana. You pay 1 of those manas to get 6 mana. That's pretty good.
Soul Ring Staff for a million mana.
You kick Rite of Replication and suddenly your lands give a bajillion mana.
I'm actually trying to find the number I put in our group chat. I think it was when you kick the Rite of Replication with it.
Well, it's it was like 3 to the 9th. 3 to the power of 9.
Yeah, you think I can do math? I'm an idiot. But I think it was...
It's 729.
Yeah, for a single...
729, man.
Like, you can actually Rite of Replication better things and actually win the game. But this is you winning at life.
700, easy.
What do you do with that, man?
Fireball?
No, Banefire.
Yeah, but Fireball can actually, you can target more people with Fireball.
We'll play something else because we have bajillion mana, so we can actually combo with that, sure.
We can copy it twice.
That's
yeah, it's a huge mana dork. It's like mana reflection, but super more reflected.
People are already freaking out because of discarding commander, and I'm like, but what's the...
Also, it says only if you tap a permanent for mana, so
yeah.
If you just sacrifice a permanent for mana, you don't get the extra mana.
Plus, it is an enchantment and it is a creature.
Yeah, so kind of vulnerable, but also reanimatable.
Yes, this is a really cool card, but people shouldn't be worrying about banning it.
Definitely. I mean, it's 7 mana for a 5/5.
That gives you 729 mana, but still.
I mean, whatever.
That's the thing. Most of the time, difference between having, let's say, 60 mana and 729 is negligible.
Yeah, pretty much.
Want to talk about some interventions?
Sure. Go ahead, start with the white
one. Healy's intervention. X and white. Instant. Choose one. Destroy X target artifacts and or enchantments, or target player gains twice X life.
Wow. I mean, the first one is good. The first one is good because it scales and, you know, you can get rid of a bunch of stuff instant speed.
You play it for the first part, first effect.
But the second one is like...
Look at it this way. Second effect is when you're actually in a really big pinch and you need to gain some life. But usually this as a removal spell is actually not that bad.
Yeah. It's good.
Out of the whole cycle, I think this is basically the best one.
I'd say the blue one is better.
Depending how much you sink into it, that's the thing. The counter spell is good. Counter spell is good.
So Stas's intervention is X and double blue for an instant. You choose one. Look at the top X cards of your library, put up to 2 of them into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Or counter target spell unless its controller pays twice X.
Yeah, then Heliod's the second best, yeah. Fair enough.
I mean, digging deep for 2 cards, that's kind of okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a timely cancel at worst is, again... It's something.
This shows us how good Mana Leak is.
Yeah.
Holy crap, they're afraid of printing effect like that. Quench is the closest one, but Quench, it doesn't do it.
For 4 mana, this counters unless they pay 4, and that's For at 4 mana, not really that impressive, let's say.
Yeah, for 3 mana, unless they pay 2, bunch of the time you're actually going to get them with that.
But a 4 mana, draw 2 cards, that's not even draw 2 cards. It bypasses it bypasses Notion Thief, it bypasses Spirit of the Labyrinth, and that's a standard. So paying 5 mana to draw to get 2 cards.
So usually you're gonna be putting in like X equals 2, let's say, right? Most of the time. Both Tassi's intervention with the counter spell and Hylian's intervention with destroying artifacts and or enchantments for X equals 2 is actually pretty good. Pretty good. I would actually play that. Erebos's intervention is black and an X. Instant choose one target creature gets -X/-X until the end of turn you gain X life. Or exile up to twice X target cards from graveyards.
Yeah, the exile up to twice X target cards from graveyards. It's very situational.
But when you need it, good grief do you need.
Yeah.
Speaking of, side note, when we were playing the pod, right? You know what card, which card was the MVP? The Frog player was gonna combo off with Darkmoor Salvage. It hits the graveyard. Dredge gets on the stack. And then the Krieg player, she played a freaking Cremate.
Got him.
I was like, what is this, Ravnica Limited? I mean, I'm loving the play. Mistake me not. I was actually laughing because somebody played a dinky thing you would maybe play in a sideboard in Ravnica Limited. But it got him. And it even cycled. But that shows you why Erebos' intervention might be good. Because when you need the Gary Hate, good grief do you need it. It's an instant, which is good.
And the first part is removal.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You're not gonna often kill a lot of things, but you know.
Yeah, sink enough mana, you can kill gods.
We are again talking about X being 2 most of the time, right? There's a bunch of actually X2s that are really annoying and killable.
Yeah.
What's the next one?
Next one is Purphoros' intervention, which is a X and a red for a sorcery. You choose one. You create an X1 red elemental creature token with trample and haste, and sack it at the beginning of the next end step. Or it deals twice X damage to target creature or planeswalker.
If the X is 2, this is like, I mean, it can be an actual real nice sweeper.
Well. I mean,
not a good one, but it kills planeswalkers. But
it deals to target creature or planeswalker.
Oh, sorry. Oh God, I misread it. Nah, then this is just like, ugh.
It's when you need something really dead, because dealing twice X damage, it's gonna be a lot. But it's sorcery speed.
Yeah, that's the balancing factor.
It's not. I don't think it's more. It's that part with the damage, but the part where you get an X1 red elemental creature token.
Maybe you need a blocker.
And you know, I mean,
It's a ball lightning. A worse variation of the ball lightning.
It's not even close to a ball lightning. For 3 mana, you get a 2/1 with trample and haste.
Hence, I said a worse variation.
That's not even worse. That's just. It's just horrible.
Oh, I'm not here defending the goddamn.
Let's just move on to the next card, because this one I don't really see anything really that good. I mean, when you pump out 729 mana into it, then yeah, it ends the game. Unlike the rest of the intervention cycle, Purple Officer's intervention can actually win the game. Unless the others can't.
Unless there is removal about and all that. Let's talk about the Elias intervention, although I don't think there's going to be a lot to talk about. X and a green is a sorcery. Choose one. Search your library for up to X land cards, reveal them and put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. Or, an Elias intervention deals twice X damage to each creature with flying.
Well, it's X land cards.
For 2, you mostly are getting what? Coffers and Urborg?
Yeah, probably.
That's okay. That's really good. But if you don't have lands like that,
it doesn't do that much.
In a normal casual EDH deck, what are you getting? That's actually that game break.
Nothing.
But you were correct that it's land card, so that's actually cool.
Yeah, getting non-basics is nice. I mean, it gets better with time, I guess, because you know.
the more you put in the eggs, the better, in this case. And if you really need those stupid flyers dead, I guess you can dead them.
Or, you know, you can just dump in a bunch of mana into intervention and then get rid of the lands in your deck.
Yeah, that's also.
It's a way to use the card, I guess. Yeah. But I think that's about it.
Let's move on to the next. We don't need to talk about Archer of Sun's Grace,
no.
Right?
No.
That's a straight limited card. That's a card that's going to beat me in limited, I'm sure, but nothing to talk about. What does the Kraken do?
But the Nadir Kraken actually does something. So it's one and a double blue for a creature Kraken, 2/3. Whenever you draw a card, you may pay one. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on Nadir Kraken and create a 1/1 blue tentacle creature token.
Combos with Skull Clamp, surprisingly.
It definitely does combo with Skull Clamp.
I hit that Skull Clamp. Finally, a card that has actually made the Skull Clamp a good card.
Uh-huh.
Finally. But besides that,
It's really good with Kidel. I think it's Kidel.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, like, let's say you brainstorm, so that's 3 Nadir Kraken triggers on the stack, and you just pay it by just tapping Kidel. And suddenly, one brainstorm, it's a 5/6 that made 3 1/1s. It's a threat. It's actually a threat that can grow on its own.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty cool card.
It's a shame the blue tentacles don't have, like, Island Walkers.
For all you freaking perverts out there, you can just put scenes from your favorite hentai and use them as tokens.
Of course.
Because we know somebody's.
Not me.
Anywho, Eto Extinction, do we even need to talk about it?
It's a removal. It's a 3 and a black for an instant. Exile target creature or planeswalker. What's it called? The Dimir keyword?
Surveil.
Surveil 1.
There you go.
That's it. That's the whole card. So
Phoenix of the Ash is They finally made the Mech Phoenix after a long, long while.
Well, we don't know. It might be actually good.
Better than the Ravnica Phoenix?
Well, no, but, you know.
But that one was stupid. Arrasta of the Endless Web is interesting. For 2 and a green, it's 3/5. Legendary Shaman Creature Spider with Reach. And whenever an opponent casts an instant or sorcery spell, create a 1/2 spider creature token with reach.
It's really good for a Nishkana deck.
Honestly, even some players playing Burning Pod are thinking to try this out.
Really?
Yeah. Because guess what? Your opponent is going to cast Ponder, or Brainstorm, and whatever else. You have this out, and next turn you cast him.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You have plenty of attackers.
Never thought of it that way.
It might not be, you know, the best card, but the people are going to be trying it for their mid-range slot. But it turns out when you have a really easy token maker with Timna, things get kind of wild.
Mm-hmm. Who would have thought?
Anything else we have to say about this card? Because this is a really straightforward card. It's really good, but it's straightforward.
Yeah, it does this one thing, and it's very clear. There's nothing really hidden about this card.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to talk about this card?
Yes, please, because I'm just like...
So, Eidolon of Obstruction. It's a 1 and a white for a 2/1 first strike enchantment creature spirit. Loyalty abilities of planeswalkers your opponents control cost 1 more to activate. Wow.
So you want to hear my thought process when I was reading the card? I saw first the title, I don't know, I'm out of Obstruction, I'm like, oh yes, finally, some good. Okay, it's a 1 and a white, it's a 2/1, it's a general creature, cool. First strike, not bad, and what the hell is this line of text?
And they're like, loyalty abilities of planeswalkers cost 1 more.
I was hoping it was gonna say that loyalty abilities of planeswalkers can't be activated.
No, you can't prevent people from using Oko, that's illegal.
Why not?
I don't know.
But honestly, that wouldn't have been a game-breaking effect.
It would be a balancing effect, but...
Yes.
You know, it's white.
That would actually be cool. This just made me sad. This Wizards trying to handle Oko?
Oh no, Oko has to pay 1 mana to do the unfair thing.
No, he's gonna pay 1 mana to turn this guy into an elk.
Okay.
Guess what? Next turn, he's just gonna be doing... his stupid Oko thing. This card made me angry. Why? Plus, look at how cool the card looks.
He's tutorable, he's a spirit, he has perfect stat lines, first strike, and then does nothing.
I'm guaranteeing you I'm gonna be opening this one in my sealed pool. I guarantee it.
I'm gonna just go skip the blue card because it doesn't do anything.
But it has protein in the name.
So we're going to black with a Gravebreaker Lamia, right?
Lamia, yeah.
For 4 and a black, it's a 4/4 enchantment creature Snake Lamia with lifelink. When Gravebreaker Lamia enters the battlefield, search your library for a card, put it into your graveyard, then shuffle your library. An entombed creature on a creature. An entombed effect on a creature. And then, spells you cast from your graveyard cost 1 less to cast.
I super wish this was a 2/2. Holy crap.
I super wished I was still playing Garador.
You still can, Niksha.
I can?
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should, yeah. Because this is a really good card for that deck.
Really?
It's like, really freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
imagine this. And then you sacrifice it, then you play it again.
And then you have Nylea, and then suddenly your cards in your graveyard cost 2 less.
I hear things costing 2 less is kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not much more to say about this one,
yeah,
because
it's an entomb effect that makes your stuff cheaper in your graveyard.
For things like, you know, Karador, this is a god. Like, holy crap.
So, wanna read the other white card here?
Which one of the two?
No, there is only one more white card in this line.
Spinner could kinda maybe, I don't know.
Nah,
Storm Herald.
That's green.
Two in a red. 3/2, haste. Human Shaman. When he enters the battlefield, return any number of aura cards from your graveyard to the battlefield attached to creatures you control. Exile those auras at the beginning of your next end step. If those auras would leave the battlefield, exile them instead of putting them anywhere else. This could have been a white card.
This should have been a white card.
And I think this is actually going to be the note of the whole podcast.
This should have been a white card.
Plenty of things here could have been an actual white card.
I just can't remember when Red cared about auras so much. Like, the last thing I remember is the uncommon legend from Dominaria that cared if something had an aura and then it made a 3/1 haster.
But that also cared about auras and equipments. Valduk, right?
And this one, it returns auras from the graveyard and attaches them to creatures you control, which is what White did. Quite often.
And it usually does, but just not here.
You know, you also have that Bruna that's white and blue and does this thing, but you know, it's suddenly red.
I'm actually super confused. But Cardon itself, it's actually super weird because you don't play with enchantments that much, with auras that much in red.
You don't, but you do play with discard spells, with rummaging spells, so you can get your Eldrazi conscription in your graveyard, and then Storm Herald becomes an Eldrazi for
you
a turn.
You do know that there's only one enchantment we carry in red. It's Splinter Twin. You could do some fun things with Splinter Twin, I guess.
Well,
but...
yeah, you can put that Splinter Twin on another creature and not Storm Herald, and win the game.
Yes, that was my point. But do you need to get Storm Herald into your deck to do those things?
Redundancy.
But it's bad redundancy, because this is only good if your plan A has failed a lot. So what's the next card?
It's Destiny Spinner, and this is definitely not a white card. It's 1 and a green for a 2/3 creature, enchantment creature human. Creatures and enchantment spells you control can't be countered. And if that wasn't enough, for 3 and a green, target land you control becomes an XX elemental creature with trample and haste until end of turn, where X is the number of enchantments you control. It's still a land.
Suck on it, Tideland Obstruction.
And this is uncommon, by the way.
Yep. Not a card you're going to be usually playing in that much in Commander, but just suck on it, white.
I don't know. If you're expecting a lot of counter spells, you're going to play the Destiny Spinner. You don't care about the second part of the effect?
Yeah.
I mean, also Enchantress-style decks. I mean, not being able to counter enchantments and not just creatures, pretty good.
Hey, they can't counter your Splinter Twin.
There you go.
Hey!
And talking about enchantments, the Idyllic Tutor is reprinted.
It's a really good card. If you're playing with any good enchantments, it's cool, get it.
Yeah, and it's gonna be super cheap now.
Yep.
Because and the whole inflated price for the Idyllic Tutor is because it was printed once.
Of course, I am getting an Enlightenment Tutor for myself, so I might not just get this one, because Enlightenment Tutor is much better. But I still might just pick it up on the cheap.
And
speaking of cheap and cards, what's the next one, Iksha?
Well, I think it's your turn to talk about the most hyped commander card from this set.
Ooh, Storm's Wrath. Just kidding. Tassa's Oracle. Blue-blue. It's a fair mana cost that never hurt anybody, right?
Yeah. Blue-blue is a very common merfolk casting cost.
Creature, merfolk, wizard. It's a 1/3. Then Tassa's Oracle enters the battlefield. Look at the top X cards of your library, where X is your devotion to blue. Put up to one of them on the top of your library and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. I wish it stopped here, but if X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game.
They just had to do it.
Yeah.
They just had to do this, right?
Niksha, how easy is it to break this card?
Well, there's this card. It's called Flash. And if you play Flash, you win the game.
Huh.
I mean, you just have to flash in Hulk, Protein Hulk, and that's it. You just won the game. Because you just... you follow these easy steps. You flash in Hulk. Hulk dies. You get Tassa's Oracle. You get Blood Pet. And you get Spellseek. First, you resolve Spellseeker to find a demonic consultation. Then, you sacrifice your Blood Pet while Tassa's Oracle effect is still in the stack. You play your demonic consultation. You get rid of your library. And then Tassa's Oracle resolves and like, okay, I'm going to scry X. Oh, look. Okay, I finished scrying. Oh, look, I win the game. Because I have zero cards in my deck.
So, unlike things like Laboratory Maniac, the new Jace from World of Spark, removing this, well, the ability on the stack doesn't do
it. Yeah, it reduces their, the devotion counter to zero, but hey, your library still has zero cards in it. And it's not if it has fewer than X. If X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library.
So
not just do you have to get rid of Tassa's Oracle, you also have to put a card from their graveyard on top of their deck.
Either that or have a Stifle effect ready or have a Hushman Grave effect ready.
Or Chimney. You flash in Chimney.
Niksha with the next level plays.
For the ultimate humiliation. Doesn't but you also have to kill Tassa's Oracle because Chimney Imp won't do anything if Tassa's Oracle survives the effect.
You know how strong this card is? Even Sheldon Manor is like, yeah, we're looking into it.
So, how about we ban Hulk?
Or Flash.
Or both.
We could just start with Flash, honestly, and then see where it goes.
Just ban both, just to be...
I mean, I would be fine with that. But yeah, this card might cause so much problem in the more competitive metas.
Eh, it might be...
like, if it died to removal and didn't do a thing, maybe. Because Lab Maniac... he has died to sudden shock so many times with the ability in the stack.
It's such a shame that it puts a card on top of your library, because like this, it's not really playable in Merfolk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's cute and all, but not really playable.
I mean, if you Aether Violet...
still, you'd rather Aether Violet, you know, Merfolk that draws a card.
Oh, definitely.
So, but... yeah, not really playable.
What's next to talk about? Because this card is straight up garbage fire and let it die in hell.
Next up, we have a Nightmare Shepherd. And this card's kind of interesting, to me at least.
It's super interesting, from so many angles.
It's a 2 and double black for a 4/4 enchantment creature demon with flying. So, the vanilla test super passed. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, you may exile it. If you do, create a token that's a copy of that creature, except it's a 1/1 and it's a nightmare in addition to its other types.
So, can I let my commander die, then exile it with this, and then put it in my command zone?
I think yes, since...
I think it should work.
Wait. If you do... I mean, it says if you do. It doesn't... man, I need to, like, think about this, but... it should work.
I think it
because
should.
You decided to exile that card. It's just that it didn't end up in the exile.
Yeah.
But you did decide to do it. It's like, it's probably just like the the black processor Eldrazi that puts a
Wasteland
card from
server?
exile into your graveyard, because it works through what's it, Rest in Peace.
Mm-hmm.
So you decide to put a card from their exile into their graveyard, and you give them something a -3/-3. The fact that it didn't actually go into the graveyard matters not. You decided to do that action. It's just that something else, you know, said, nah, it's still in exile.
So that's a nifty way to do your commander still.
And to have a 1/1 version of it.
But still, it's not bad. Yeah. Depending if your commander has a really strong static ability, something like Vilas. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also, if you're not going into some reanimation shenanigans in a aristocrat style of deck,
mm-hmm.
this is super good. Because you don't care about your creatures being exiled. You're still, you know, getting double the value out of them.
I mean, even if you are, you can choose, pick and choose what to actually use for this.
You're basically doubling up your creatures with Nightmare mm-hmm. Shepherd if you mm-hmm. have a sec outlet.
And if you're playing aristocrats, you are.
Even in Yarok, you're doubling up your... You're basically quadrupling your Enter the Battlefield effect.
Sheesh.
Like, okay. Oh, and
what?
You can double your... No, you can't. I was thinking you can double your When Something Dies effects, but you can't. Because you still need to exile. You get the double trigger, but for the trigger to actually do something, you have to exile the card.
Yep.
So you can't double it up.
I think they were thinking of that.
They probably weren't, but it's lucky for them that it worked out this way.
Congrats, luck is important.
But...
Next card, Storm's Wrath, is just 4 damage to each creature and each planeswalker. That's a cool thing to have. Mantle, we don't have to talk about. Shatter the Sky is actually interesting. 2 white-white, sorcery, each player who controls a creature with power 4 or greater draws a card. Then, destroy creatures.
Chad strong. Chad really good with card.
It also works for you, which is not bad.
Yeah, that's what I said. So, with a Gideon tribal deck, since they're all at least 4/4, you get to draw a card and, you know, kill everything else, and then Gideon just goes in because he's indestructible.
It's a cool wrath. That's all.
It's might a help 4 your mana opponents. Wrath in standard.
Yeah. It's gonna help your opponents, maybe.
If it helps your opponents, kind of. It's still worth, but
if
not...
it helps your opponents less than it helps you.
If only you draw a card, then it's super good.
That, and if you're actually if you're casting a wrath, there's a reason why you're casting a wrath.
I mean, it curves perfectly from the Gideon Blackblade, because he's a 4/4 creature on your turn regardless.
Yep.
And you can give something else indestructible and keep everything.
Yep, and then Chad and the friend can smack. Rest in peace, Chad. Next card, I guess, because this was just a wrath, so...
Thrix, the Sudden Storm, not really that interesting, but still. Thrix, the Sudden Storm, is a 3 in double blue for a 4/5 flash flying legendary creature elemental giant. Spells you cast with converted mana cost 5 or greater cost 1 less to cast and can't be countered. I mean, okay.
The art looks like a D&D monster.
Oh, to me it looks like, I don't know, it reminds me of Tekken.
I can see why, Heihachi, right? Uh-huh. Treacherous Blessing, we talked about it, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, 3 mana,
it's fun.
Draw 3.
It's cool. Tectonic Giant is nice.
Mm-hmm.
2 red, it's 3/4 elemental giant. Whenever Tectonic Giant attacks or becomes target of a spell an opponent controls, choose one. It deals 2 damage to each opponent, or exile
3
damage, yeah.
3, not 2.
I thought I said 3. I'm sorry, I'm tired. Exile the top 2 cards of your library. Choose one of them. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card.
Ooh, card draw.
Holy mother of card advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm liking the giant.
Yep. It's like the Regent Dragon from Khans,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Only it's better.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't have flying, but it triggers on attacks as well,
mm-hmm.
And you can actually, you know, get some extra cards.
He basically attacks for...
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool. What about the boar? Do we even talk about
it's
the boar?
It's a big stupid creature.
It's a big
that's
stupid.
It.
Talk about Taranica.
Just because we...
Yep. You put us into this hole.
So Taranica, Akron Veteran, is a 1 double white 3/3 legendary creature, human soldier with vigilance. And whenever it attacks, untap another target creature you control. Until end of turn, that creature has base power and toughness 4/4 and gains indestructible.
It untaps Sisay.
Tutored by Sisay, so it can untap Sisay.
That's not a bad thing to think about.
Yeah, but you see, it's a creature you have to play and then attack with it. And
Wow. It's white, it's trying, okay?
It's 3/3, so it dies to Bolt.
You're the only person I know who plays Bolt.
I don't care. People will catch on to Bolt being a good card. There's a reason why Bolt is played in literally every format in Magic and why it's one of the best cards in the game.
I'm not contradicting you that much. I think I should be playing Bolt in Commander, but I don't have the places. But even more importantly, I don't have a Lightning Bolt.
So let's go on to a more interesting card, if you would please.
Wavebreak Hippocamp. 2 and a blue for 2/2, elemental creature Horsefish, because of course. And whenever you cast your first spell during each opponent's turn, draw a card.
Turns your counter spells into cantrip.
Yep, blue players be rejoicing.
So it's an enchantment creature that costs 3 mana, which means that Zur can tutor it.
Yeah. Wanna talk about Woe Strider?
It's a sec outlet.
Yes, and there we go. Plus it makes white goats.
It's okay for, you know, standard to have a free sec outlet. It's good for Pioneer to get a free sec outlet on a creature, but really for Commander and such, we have enough of these
kinds
of effects.
But compare this to Viscerous Seer. How much Viscerous Seer is actually strong?
So, Woe Strider is 2 and a black for a 3/2 creature horror. When it enters the battlefield, you get a 0/1 white goat. You sacrifice another creature to scry 1, and it has escaped for 3 double black and exile 4 cards. And it escapes with 2 +1/+1 counters, so it's a 5/4, but that's not really that important. The important part is where you can sacrifice other creatures for free.
But like I was saying, compare a common from M11 with Woe Strider. Of course, Woe Strider is bigger. It gets a creature you can sack. You can get it back from graveyard, but Viscerous Seer is the 1/1 that can sack any creature.
Even itself.
Making it so much superior than Woe Strider, which shows us that actually Wizards know how strong that was.
Yeah.
So good on you, Wizards, actually picking that clue up.
If only they could pick up all the other clues.
They're trying. Next card is super interesting, though. Underworld Breach. 1 and a red. Enchantment. Each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's mana cost plus exile 3 other cards from your graveyard. At the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Underworld Breach.
So it's Yavgmoth's what? Will?
Will, yes.
Almost.
This can be untitled, and if a card enters your graveyard, you don't exile it.
Mm-hmm. And it goes infinite with Lion's Eye Diamond.
Surprising. Aren't you actually supposed to be exiling also 3 other cards from your graveyard?
I mean, you need to actually draw some cards, so you can actually... You need to draw cards with, you know, using Lion's Eye Diamond, but Lion's Eye Diamond fuels itself for Underworld.
You don't even need that much to make this card super strong. Just treat it as a Yagwant's Will for red.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a bunch of really nasty things you can do with it.
Mm-hmm. Even just recurring things for value. It's you can Sun Titan. That's the fun part. Read the next white card.
Deathland Champion is a 2 and a green for a 1/3 human warrior with Constellation. Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Setessan Champion and draw a card.
This could have been one. Name of the podcast.
Also, did you notice that all the Constellation cards aren't enchantments?
Yeah.
While in the previous Theros, all the Constellation cards were enchantments.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, getting value out of themselves is pretty darn good.
You think?
They obviously think it was too good.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh well. A creature for a 3 mana, if this were an enchantment creature, then what? It would be a 3 mana 2/4 that draws a card.
Yep.
That's kind of okay.
I mean, this is still pretty.
If you're playing it. And there's actually an enchantment we're gonna talk about, because it's pretty good.
So we skipped like a bunch of these.
Yeah.
Dryad of the Elysian Grove. 2 and a green, it's a 2/4 enchantment creature nymph. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. Lands you control are every basic land type in addition to their other type.
Nice.
Screw me.
You know, Prismatic Omen needed a reprint, but this will do just fine.
This might do better than Prismatic Omen.
Yeah, it's 3 mana compared to 2 mana. 5. But, What?
Wait, are we talking about the Prismatic, that 5 mana enchantment that makes everything...
No, Prismatic Vista
that's
2
mana.
That's
2 mana, oh my god. I'm always thinking it's 5, because I'm balancing it in my head.
I mean, turning your cards into basic land types isn't really that good. It's good when you have a Valakut, but not at any other point.
I mean, they basically just combined the mana costs of Prismatic Omen and Exploration.
Yeah.
And made it a 2/4, so you can't even bolt it for it.
You need to sudden death it.
I mean, this is a card that Commander players are just going to be getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing really much to say. It's an exploration that also fixes your mana perfectly.
Yeah, even through Blood Moon.
We got a couple of uncommon demigods, but they're really not that impressive for me yet.
No.
We already talked about Daxus, and the others aren't really that... Okay, there Anax?
Anax is interesting.
Anax is actually interesting, yeah, so... Anax Hardened in the Forge is a 1 and double red for a legendary enchantment creature demigod, star 3, and his power is equal to your devotion to red, so by himself it's a 2/3. Whenever Anax or another non-token creature you control dies, create a 1/1 red satyr creature token with this creature can't block. If the creature had power 4 or greater, create 2 of those tokens instead.
That's pretty cool, you can make nifty things like that.
I would say that this is a neat little engine for the Jund sacrifice deck in Standard.
Oh yeah!
Because, you know, getting extra value out of your stuff, pretty deep.
I'm looking through the rest of the spoiler to see if there's anything interesting. Gary's back, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like Gary.
We have One with the Stars.
What does that do?
One with the Stars is... previously, it was one of those test cards in the mystery boosters. One with the Stars is a 3 and a blue, enchantment aura, enchant creature or enchantment. Enchanted permanent is an enchantment and loses all other card types. It still has its abilities, but it's no longer a creature. It's a thing.
It is a thing.
It's interesting. It does something that... we didn't really see. So, what can happen with it? We'll see.
I mean, it's a removal spell. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Or a protection spell.
Helios Punishment is just interesting. It's basically Hercules' 12 tasks. One on a white enchantment or enchant creature. Helios Punishment enters the battlefield with 4 task counters on it. Enchanted creature can't attack or block. It loses all abilities and has remove a task counter from Helios Punishment. Then, if it has no test counters on it, destroy Helios Punishment. It has taps and... sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris Totten for the win?
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, that's cool. Underworld Dreams is back.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray!
I just wanted to mention that... here are a couple of cards. So we have Dawn Evangel for a 2 and a white, a 2/3 enchantment creature, human cleric.
Fuck you.
Whenever a creature dies, if an aura you controlled was attached to it, return target creature card with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. So it's like a bajillion loops to return a creature card with mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. And then you have Hateful Eidolon, who is not a white card, but it is in fact a black card. It's for one black, it's a 1/2 enchantment creature spirit with lifelink. Look, it even has lifelink. Whenever an enchanted creature dies, draw a card for each aura you control that was attached to it. So, let's just say you play a Hateful Idol on turn 1. Your opponent plays, let's say, a Gilded Goose. And then you put a dead weight on that goose.
Boom.
You just didn't lose a card. You drew a card because you killed something with your dead weight. I call that a win. And by the way, Hateful Eidolon is a black card.
But hey, Dawn Evangel might have maybe given us a creature back to our hand.
And Maybe, and if it's only a creature, if an aura you controlled was attached to it.
Well, still, it was an aura you controlled with dead weight.
Yeah, that.
But
too.
Still, you would just get a creature with CMC 2 or less, maybe.
Well, Hateful Eidolon, if you're going for some, like, Voltron-y stuff, and you put, like, 3 enchantments on a single creature, then suddenly it dies, and you draw 3 cards.
Honestly, just put a Rancor on it.
Just put a Rancor on it and...
There.
I don't know, use Skull Clamp.
Put a Rancor on it, go smack people. What are they gonna do? Not block? Fine, it's okay.
Oh, and you know that Merfolk Oracle that wins the game? They did put something against it, only it's really situational. It's Mystic Repeal. For a single green mana, it's an instant. Put target enchantment on the bottom of its owner's library.
Hey.
So all you have to do is, they need to have a Mystic Remora. You need to have a Lightning Bolt. So you can Lightning Bolt the Merfolk, and then Mystic Repeal the Remora on the bottom of their deck, and then they don't win the game.
This is so much sad. For maybe winning the game. If they have a Rhystic Study, we're doomed.
I mean, you can still put the Rhystic Study too. It's an...
Okay, but we still come to the, you know... Anything else that's interesting? I mean, there is a Hyrax Tower Scout. When it enters the battlefield, you untap target creature. It's a 3/3 for 3 mana. Combos with Kiki.
Also, it's green.
If you needed something in your red-green decks to win the game and didn't want to play something like Azazel's Conscript because it's 5 mana. Plus, hey, this is going to be like super cheap in foil, so get that.
I just like to mention that Stinging Lionfish is kind of interesting. It could be. For 1 in a blue, a 2/1 enchantment creature fish, so tutorable with Zur.
Hey!
Whenever you cast your first spell during each opponent's turn, you may tap or untap target non-land permanent. So let's say they're playing their, Scepter.
Isochron Scepter?
Isochron Scepter. And like, okay, your trigger is on the stack. In response, I play Opt and tap your Scepter.
Hey.
You don't even need Winter Orb anymore.
You always need it.
Well, at this point, you don't. You're just winning.
Anything else this action? Because I'm not seeing that much.
Well, White got its signature ability with Flicker of Fate, but no, nothing. So, I think we can just go straight to the multicolor guard.
We still have multicolor to go through.
Ah, Thirst for Meaning. Thirst for Meaning, a 2 and a blue, instant. Draw 3 cards, then discard 2 cards, unless you discard an enchantment card.
Hey!
At common. So, pauper playable, and actually probably pretty decent.
Oh god, there is so much to talk about.
I don't think there is.
We
talked about Ashiok, we talked about Atheros, we talked about Clothis.
Kalix, we don't have need to talk about, I think.
It's just, you know...
Oh, we'll talk about him next time. Not as a card.
We did get a couple of interesting commanders, though.
So, Kroxa, Titan of Death's Hunger, it's Rakdos for 6/6. So, passes the vanilla test.
Yeah, 2 mana 6/6. Pretty good.
Legendary creature, Elder Giant. When it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escaped. Whenever Kroxa enters the battlefield or attacks, each opponent discards a card, and each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card this way loses 3 life. An escape of black-black, red-red, exile 5 other cards from your graveyard. Blum.
Well, definitely interesting.
With Sun Titan, you can just keep on attacking with Sun Titan and getting this guy back and make him discard everything.
Yeah, and if they don't discard a non-land card, they lose 3 life.
Smack!
I still don't... So, if they discard a land card, they lose 3 life, right?
Yes. If they didn't discard a non-land card, they lose 3 life. And land is a non-land card.
Man, this whole sentence, that didn't discard a non-land card. It like sounds like a double negative, and it's like super tilting me.
But it works. If they have an empty hand, they lose 3 life.
But it sounds so wrong.
This fixes one of the biggest problems that discard decks have, and that's... What do you do when, you know, they have an empty hand? Or just keep on discarding lands?
The escape trigger on it makes it really nice to avoid the commander attacks.
Mm-hmm. Next one?
Next one is a lot more interesting to me. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. It's a 1 green blue for a 6/6. So doesn't really, not really like, it's not 2 mana 6/6, but 3 mana 6/6. That's still decent. Legendary creature, Elder Giant. When it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it unless it escaped. And whenever Uro enters the battlefield or attacks, you gain 3 life and draw a card. Then you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. This is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for 3 mana, gaining 3 life, a card, and a land, that's pretty neat. And escape for double green, double blue, and 5 other cards.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So this is definitely an interesting card, definitely an interesting commander, because it's a ramp commander. And we know how much we needed more of those, right?
People are gonna be doing combos and stuff with that. That's cool. Polukrinos is a 0/0. Okay, you were gonna say
Uro combos with Aluren.
Surprisingly.
So you need Aluren and like Manowar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Pretty good.
Yeah, Polukrinos Unchained for 2 and a black and a green, legendary creature Zombie Hydra. It enters the battlefield with 6++ counters on it. It escapes with 12++ counters on it instead. If damage will be dealt to Polukrinos while it has a +++ counter on it, prevent that damage and remove that many +++ counters from it. 1 black and a green, Polukrinos fights another creature. Escape, 4 black and a green, exile 6 other cards from your graveyard, and it's a 0/0.
I mean, other than a huge creature, it doesn't really do that much else.
Polukrinos was basically always just a big creature.
Yeah, but this is a big creature that shrinks.
Yeah.
It's immune to Death Touch, though.
Hooray! What's next? Atris?
Atris was so close to being a really cool card, but his biggest problem is that there was a card that did this effect, and it didn't see any play. So, Atris Oracle of Half-Truths, it's a 2 blue and a black for a 3/2 legendary creature, Human Advisor with Menace. When it enters the battlefield, target opponent looks at the top 3 cards of your library and separates them into a face-down pile and a face-up pile. Put one pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard.
If you can flicker it, it's cool.
It's really cool. I mean, it's a cool card. It's a 4-mana 3/2 with menace that draws you 1 or 2 cards.
If you ever wanted a commander for your Factor Fiction deck, there.
I mean, you have the Sphinx that literally affects options, but okay.
No. This has black in it.
But yeah, there was that Sphinx's something for 4 mana instant that did Factor Fiction, but in this way, that your opponent separated them and
yes,
it saw 0 play. So.
Of course it did. Next, Deincarnation, I guess?
I'm just going to say that a Bronzehide Lion, so it's a green and a white for a 3/3 creature cat. It gets indestructible for green and a white, and when it dies, return it to the battlefield. It's an aura enchantment with enchanted creature you control, with enchant creature you control, and it has the ability to gain indestructible, and it loses all other abilities. So, you know, it's just your shadow, death's shadow that's suddenly 13/13.
Yeah,
and that's the only that's actually.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I mean, you can also put it in Polukrinos, and then it's just a 12/12 that doesn't lose counters.
That's cool.
Kinda.
Enigmatic Incarnation for 2 and a blue and a green. Enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, you may sacrifice another enchantment. If you do, search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to 1 plus the sacrificed enchantment's converted mana cost. Put that card onto the battlefield and shuffle your library.
It's a super fixed pod.
Yep.
Except it's a really kind of bad pod because you need to sacrifice an enchantment. And it can't sacrifice itself.
Yep.
So if you could sacrifice an enchantment to find an enchantment, okay, but that would maybe be broken.
They burn themselves on the pod many enough times.
Yeah, they have to fix it.
What's next? Did we even talk about Galia or?
No.
Let's talk about Haktos just because he's funny.
Okay. Haktos the Unscarred, double red, double white, 6/1 human warrior, legendary creature. Attacks each combat if able. As Haktos enters the battlefield, choose 2, 3, or 4 at random. Haktos has protection from each converted mana cost other than the chosen number. So let's just say, so if it drops on 3, he has protection from everything that's not 3 CMC, which is a really nice sweet spot because you can still put swords on him, but not much else. And let's just say that in Modern, he's pretty much immune to removal.
I mean, Plague Engineer kind of screws him over.
Kind of does, yeah.
He super does,
but Plague Engineer isn't that popular because, you know, Plague Engineer naming elks isn't that much of a value, and, you know, he becomes an elk after that. But yeah, if Haktos lands on, like, 4, then he has also protection from Oko.
Yep.
So...
He's a fun creature. I actually want to get him just... To carry on, Kunoros, Hound of Atreus is one white and a black. 3/3, legendary creature Hound, Vigilance, Menace, Lifelink. Creature cards the graveyards can't enter the battlefield. Players can't cast spells from graveyards. Screw me over, Orzo, will you?
This is a really good card.
It is. Not for my type of decks, but it's a really good card.
It's a hate dog, because it's definitely not a bear.
Nope.
It's a super cool hate card, and it has 5 upsides. It's a 3-mana 3/3 with 5 upsides, which is not, unlike the Questing Beast, it's a 4-mana 4/4 with 6 upsides. This one has only 5, so we'll see if it's actually playable.
Anything else we need to talk about? Siona, I think that's it.
Well, Siona goes infinite very easily, so yeah.
So, Siona, Captain of the Phileas, 1 green, white, it's a 2/2. Legendary creature, human soldier, when she enters the battlefield, look at the top 7 cards of your library, you may reveal an aura card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in random order. Whenever an aura you control becomes attached to a creature you control, create a 1/1 white human soldier creature token. What does it combo with, Nexha?
Shielded by Faith.
Way!
And you just get... as many 1/1 dudes as you want.
And then you stop.
And also, it digs really deep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, super deep. 7 cards, like, wow.
Because it's super specific, so...
Yeah, super specific, but wow, that's digging mm-hmm. deep.
Anything else, or is that the whole...
2 more cards, actually.
What?
Nyx Lotus and Shadow Spear.
Nyx Lotus is just a fixed...
Nyctos.
Nyctos. But you have things that untap artifacts.
Yeah, like Paradox Saint.
That, or Manifold Key, or Voltaic Key.
Nyx Lotus is Nyctos, but on an artifact that costs 4.
And enters the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, because I think they learned their lesson.
Shadow Spear for 1. Legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has Trample and Lifelink. Equip of 2 and 1 generic permanence your opponent's control lose hexproof and indestructible until the end of turn.
Why doesn't it say they lose Shroud as well?
What's Shroud?
I don't know, it's just a random word that just came up to me.
Damn. But this is super strong. It doesn't have to be attached to a creature to actually do the effect.
So it's an actually useful equipment.
Yeah, screw you, fucking Sigarda.
but they can still gain hexproof after you resolve the effect.
Well. They can, but she has Hexproof on her own, so you know.
So even in the time when, even if this was printed while my arch nemesis Hydra was still in the format, it wouldn't help me.
Nope.
I would have to pay I would have to keep on paying the mana to make it lose Hexproof. And then I'd still have to have the mana to actually kill it.
Yeah, and that was the spoiler, right?
Those were the spoilers. Those was also some, The rest of the temple cycles, and that's about it.
That's about it. So, done for the night?
I just wanted to... I was counting the number of cards that I found interesting, and I thought maybe we were just being harsh on Wizards and White. Maybe they're like... Maybe the rest of the colors are also just as boring. And cards I found playable, not counting the gods, in White... In white, there were 2 cards. In blue, there were 12 cards.
Oh
in
my God.
Black, there were 7. In red, there were 6. And in green, there were 8. So, that's a yikes from me.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go end the evening now and just start crying about the state of white.
No. Well, you see, white is good when it's not alone. And I think that's what they, I guess they want to push, because some of these multicolored white cards are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But the white cards aren't.
Well, that's it.
Well, yeah, that's it. We're getting some interesting command. We're getting a couple of interesting commanders. We're getting some bonkers overpowered cards for competitive commander.
Mm-hmm.
Some more reasons to ban Ballista in some formats.
Hooray!
And a bunch of fixed stuff.
And that's it for this week.
That's it for the week. And next time, well, who knows what we're gonna do next time.
We have some ideas.
Yeah.
But this has been episode 109 of the Elder Dragon Dirlo podcast. This was your host Igor, and as always with me was my co-host Nixia. Say bye, Nixia.
Bye.
And as always, the Emperor protects.